Welcome home, everyone. Thank you for joining in on this episode of Welcome Home with the Katinas. Welcome Home is a podcast where I, your host Josh, sit down for a conversation with different people who I admire and discuss whatever's on their mind, and especially focus on life at home in times like this. Wherever you are and however you're listening, thank you for your support, and once again, welcome home. Welcome, everybody. Thank you for joining in on this week's episode of Welcome Home with the Katinas. Happy May to whoever's listening or watching on our YouTube channel. The year is flying by. If you're a part of our cousin community, you on the first of this month, you received an email with our verse of the month, which is a thing that we like to do with our community to meditate on the word together. So check your emails if you haven't already for May's verse of the month. There's a devotion there, and throughout this month we're going to be focusing on that verse, and we're really looking forward to doing that. I want to thank those of you who support this show by listening, by watching, and especially those of you who are monthly partners with Katina Ministries. If it weren't for you, we wouldn't be able to do this show and a lot of the other things that we do as a ministry. So thank you so much. And if you want to learn more about what it means to be a partner with Katina Ministries, the best way to do that is to visit our website, thekatinas.com, and you'll find all the information you need there. So thanks in advance for that. Today, we are joined by a first-time guest of the show. Certainly not a first-time guest at the Katina's house, but he's someone who he means a lot to our family. He means a lot to my dad and my uncles, someone who they care about a lot. And so I'd like to welcome to the show Mr. Dez Duran. Dez.
Hey, thank you, man.
Thank you so much for being here.
It's an honor to be here. Are you kidding me?
I heard you had to fight the midday Nashville traffic to get here.
I did. Because Nashville's so country, I kind of always forget we have traffic. Yeah. And I live like out in the country, like Hermitage. So okay. I'm just kind of like, this place doesn't have traffic. I've lived here 4 years. I still can't get it through my head. Exactly.
We're not in Shreveport anymore.
Exactly.
Well, bro, I want to ask you as we begin, if you would just introduce yourself to our listeners, tell us whatever they need to know about you, and then if you would share what your connection is to the Katina family as well.
Of course. Oh, that's going to take a while. Yeah. Where do we start? Where do we begin? My name is Dez Duran. I'm a singer-songwriter from Shreveport, Louisiana. Originally, I've kind of bounced everywhere. I sing kind of like jazz, pop, Michael Bublé. I want to be Michael Bublé.
Yeah. Who doesn't?
I ain't ashamed to say it. But yeah, that's kind of what I do right now. And living here in Nashville for the last 4 years, I'm really excited to be here. I love this city so much. And the Katinas, I'm just the Katinas' biggest fan. Oh, man. That's probably just where it started, is them coming to our church. And my parents just were so in love with them. And then seeing them perform for the first time and being like, this is the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life. Like, I'm not being hyperbolic either. It's just like I was blown away and was like, I want to be these guys. And I remember my dad giving me their record and being like, just try and sing like these guys. Yeah. Like, try and imitate them. Mm-hmm. And I would just listen to y'all's record for hours and hours, man. That white album to start, and then moving on to every one of them, man. I was just such a fan. And then when I was 11, my dad decided that, like, we were going to get to be the Katinas. Wow. And, like, we were going to record our own record, me and my brother. And it started off just me and my brother. And we came up to Nashville, and y'all had written some of the coolest songs. I was like, this is the best thing ever. And we got in the studio, and they were trying to teach us how to sing, man, and, like, trying to help us figure it all out. D-Rod was, like, I guess 15, and he was going through puberty, and, like, his voice was, like, cracking in the booth, you know what I'm saying?
Kept lowering,
like,
the keys.
Yeah, man. We kept lowering the keys, and so that was, like, a little bit of a struggle. And then I was just so nervous, I could barely, like, sing. It was like either a whisper or a scream. Like, there was no in between for me. But they stuck with us, and it was such, like, a just a really cool time, man. Just hang out with Ghost and Jesse and everybody. Yeah, exactly.
Josh Ree was on it.
And then finally, DC came in. Our older sister was there, and she was, I think she was signed to Pamplin at the time. And she came in just to listen to the songs, and she was like, these songs are so cool. They're cooler than my songs. And she was like, I want to be a part of this. Like, I want to have my brothers with me, and I want to be. And thank God she did, man, because she really took those songs up to the next level. And it was such a cool experience, man. Just
3D, right?
3D. And then Third Day told us we couldn't name it that. We got like a cease and desist from Third Day. I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but I was 11, so I didn't sign an NDA. So we ended up being Duron. Yeah. But it was such a cool time, man. I'll remember that forever.
Look around, tell me, what do you see?
That was our favorite song. I don't think that made the project, which is crazy. Dude, that was my favorite song on the thing.
Gosh. You know the thing, Dez, and it's so good to have you on here. I think that, and obviously we're family, we're brothers. And the most impactful people, and Josh, you know this, all of our kids, they grew up being fans of Best Buddies and the Duron family.
I had the cassette.
I'm still
sorry. You remember that?
No, dude. I used to fall asleep to those tapes.
I mean, I think there was a point where the VCR would wear out so much that we had to kind of manipulate it. But the Duron family is really, they're at the top of Mount Rushmore for us, you know, just in every way. Obviously, ministry-wise, we learned so much from your parents, but you and the siblings, Destiny, DC, Danny Rodney, D-Rod, Dakota, it's just D. Yep. And so I think that with you being here just makes me reminisce about not just the old times, but really what family is about. And you know, I've got my own family now. I'm going to be a granddad. Can you believe that?
Smokes.
In a couple months. But I do. I often think about the Durons, you know, and whenever I think about family and what I aspire in being a father and a husband and just what I want for my family and what I now want for Jackson and Dylan, who are now married, man, you guys set the standard, bro. And so just to see where you're at now in your journey and in your career and just all the opportunities that are coming your way, man, it's not a surprise. You know, we've seen it, and we you know, as they say, man, the scoreboard speaks for itself, and it's not a shocker that all of you, you know, just the whole Duron crew, how God is using you guys to still impact the world, even in 2024, man. It's amazing.
I love you, man. Thank you for that. I'll say it was opposite too, though, because I mean, y'all were watching Best Buddies. We were watching you guys, and like my parents would say that they'd be like, "Look at them. They're brothers. They love each other. This is what your life can look like if you'll stay in it. If you'll love each other." And it almost makes me emotional. But yeah, man, we watched you guys, and we just loved you guys, and y'all were such an incredible example of what family can be. Y'all are the dream, man, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Uncle John, do you have any young Dez Duron memories? What was it? How old was he when you guys met?
I don't think Dakota was born yet when we first met you. But then our first Songs of the Season, which was 100 years ago.
Songs of the Season was a this big Christmas production that Pastor Denny and Dianza put together at the Strand Theater, right?
Yeah, the Strand Theater. That was like the big theater downtown.
Yes.
So, Dez, man, you were in a white tuxedo. You might have been four or five.
Yeah, I believe
I think you and David D. were in it, even as young as you were. So that was my first memory of you. And I think you might have had a solo.
Yeah, they got us going fast.
Early,
yeah.
That it sounds was, familiar.
Yeah.
You might have been like
right
in a trio.
Now,
I think I remember you being in a trio with, remember Gerard Woods?
I don't even remember.
It was, man, it was you. I think, I don't know if you guys were Three Wise Men or something.
Okay. Doesn't sound far off.
So we go way back.
Exactly. We go way back.
So Des, you're from Shreveport. I can't believe you've been living in Nashville 4 years now.
Yeah, pretty well. I guess it's three. Okay. Sorry, yes, my math's off.
So what's the story? How'd you get? What brought you to Nashville?
Yeah, man. I was in New York. I'd been there for about 4.5 years. Okay. And I was really like auditioning like crazy. And then I would sing in this like event band, wedding band as well. And then I was kind of auditioning for like Broadway stuff. Okay. And I had kind of stumbled into that. I went up to New York for a weekend in 2016. It was to see Daughtry speak at a conference, Daughtry, my sister. And then this girl called me. She was like, hey, my duet partner dropped out of my one-woman show at 54 Below. Will you just come sing the duet and then maybe do a solo song? So I did that. And then she asked me to stay 2 weeks. And then this agent, I get drinks with this agent. And he's like, hey, we're not going to sign you, but I'll send you to auditions if you end up moving here. So I was like, I'm moving here. So I lived the first 6 months out of just my carry-on.
Oh my goodness.
And then, which you think that story's cool, but like when you go to New York, everyone's like, yeah, same. That's my story too. Like, you know, but I was auditioning for years and years, and then the pandemic happened. Yeah. And I went home for like what I thought we all thought was going to be 3 months. And I was like, when again will it make sense for me to live in Shreveport while pursuing this dream? I was like, let me just go make the most of this and really dive into my family. Mm. And while I was there, I really started writing. I was writing every day. I would like dedicate like 4 hours to writing every day. And then, you know, we all wanted to come out stronger, bigger, faster, yeah. wiser. And then we realized it wasn't going to end. But I kind of just woke up and I was like, man, like this Broadway thing, like it's always been something like a dream, like that'd be cool, but it's not like who I am or who I want to be. And I'm a baritone. Everything is a tenor part, you know what I mean? And so I was like, I want to record music. And I want to record songs I've written and songs other people have written too, but I want to get in the recorded music. And so I started just taking trips to Nashville. I would drive my grandma's Buick with 100,000 miles on it.
A classic.
Yeah, up to Nashville. And then I just crashed with friends and kind of like get the landscape and see if there's opportunity here. And people I had met were kind of excited about something different as far as they felt like they could get behind the whole like traditional pop crooner thing. So just kind of made the leap, bought a car, and moved in with y'all's friend Mick. Yeah. Who I moved in with Mick. And that continues my story with the Katinas because it's not over. When I auditioned for The Voice, I was on The Voice twice, season 2 and 3, so like the very beginning of the show. And I auditioned for season 2, and I did not make it. And it was pretty embarrassing. The response was really great online. Like, people were like, why didn't he make a team? But at the end of the day, like, I dropped out of school and quit football to fall on my face. You know what I'm saying? Like, I thought it was like God was going to like honor this sacrifice I made. I got a call. I never know what brother called me when I look back at these memories, but I got a call to come on, do like just like a short tour through California. And that was just like the most special thing ever to me, because it was just like such a cool thing to happen out of this like failure. And you guys just like reached out, I guess, just to be kind. And so I opened up the show with like 2 songs. I think it was like To God Be the Glory by Andre Crouch. Yeah, yeah. And then I did like Gotta Keep Your Head Up by Andy Grammer. It's just like the most like nonsensical two-song set list you've ever heard.
It worked, though.
We noticed that on this leg, there was like maybe 4 or 5 dates. We had some younger fans out there like, what's going on here? Dez is with us.
Yeah, right, man.
Because we started feeling like, man, we're cool, man. We're getting our like second wind or something. Yeah.
For them, younger fans is like under 50.
So funny.
middle school age.
But it was cool. Another thing that was special about that was every night, I think it was intentional, a different brother stayed with me in the hotel, and we roomed together. Yeah. And I had like just really great talks with each of you guys, and that was something that I'll always kind of stick with me. So I just really appreciate that intentionality, and y'all kind of turned that season around for me. And then Yeah, just since we've moved to Nashville, just hanging out. I'm still trying to get a pickleball game going, but
bro,
they're scared.
Well,
so,
call Uncle Jesse.
Yes. Yeah.
Call Uncle Jesse. He's the one to call.
Exactly. But
Des, you were mentioning
impact on my life.
Just the that season where you did The Voice, and it was two seasons, right?
Yeah,
yeah.
Two seasons.
The second season, obviously you were on that thing for I don't know how long, but you're an interesting you're in an interesting position because you know the old school of the music process, you know, and in grinding. There was no YouTube back
right,
then.
Totally.
There's none of the platforms, and then obviously with your time with things like The Voice and other things, what would you say, maybe you can speak to not only your experience but even your interaction with the different types of artists, you know, the old school artists like the Katinas, and then you know, young cats who are, you know, they don't know anything out of you know, getting set up in all of these platforms and digitally.
Totally.
Can you kind of speak to just not only your experience but kind of the differences between the two?
Yeah, I think before it was like you just kind of like really honed your craft and then tried to get your stuff in front of people that could help.
Demos.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then they would kind of walk you through everything. And now it's like very much like, hey, figure it out on your own. And when you figure it out, like, we'll boost it to the next level. It's like a different kind of grind nowadays, I think. Like, we just kind of like learned back in the day, like when we did Duran or all that stuff, it was just learn to sing, get the harmonies right, get everything tight, and make a great show. And then someone will make it, get it out there and put opportunities in your place. And now it's like very much like figure it out. You know what I mean?
You're right.
Get on TikTok.
Get on TikTok. Make a podcast, dude. You know what I'm saying? It's like you got to do everything.
Well, because
now,
back then, and there are still labels.
Totally,
But it was definitely a machine. There was a music empire.
Right.
And that was really kind of the process. And as you said, you alluded to, now because of technology and just all of the different platforms, you literally can record a whole album just on a laptop.
It's true.
Right? And then, yeah, connections are still important, but it's very, very different.
Yeah. It's, in a lot of ways, it's, like, wonderful, and in other ways, it's, like, overwhelming. Like, there's a new platform every 2 weeks.
I think with technology, it definitely benefits the independent
definitely
artist. Back then, everybody was like, man, I need to get signed.
Right.
That was partially true. But now you don't really need a label per se, but maybe just resources, partnerships with different, whether it be streaming platforms or maybe management to some degree. But I think if you have a vision for what you want to do and who you want to reach, it's the beauty of the internet, man. You're like,
truly,
you're right there. It's just a matter of, you know, there are no rules per se, you know.
Yeah,
and I think you have to like give into that. You know what I mean? Like that the new world. I think for me, I've like been very resistant to like, no, I've spent all these years learning to sing and write songs. Like that's all I should have to do. And it's like, nah, man. Like it's the new world. Like you got to be a content creator. You got to be like a connector. You got to be kind of all these things.
And so, the consumer these days, I mean, they don't have to go to a live show. They're like, nah, you come to me. So it's like out of sight, out of mind. And so I think we're kind of in this space now, even though we came up the traditional way of being signed to a label, distribution deal, and the whole nine. Now we can't, we realize that we can't put out content quick enough.
Dude, you cannot.
The consumer is like, nah, give me more. But there's a good synergy that's happening between the content creator and their audience. And you don't, I don't know, some people might debunk this, but I don't think you have to have a huge, huge following to make it or to make a living. If you have a loyal following and you guys stay connected in relationship, I think that's how this whole thing works.
100%. You got to have some cousins.
Gotcha. Des, you mentioned this in an earlier question, and I want to go back to it. The one thing that I have a lot of respect for, and something that I honor, is people who take a leap of faith. And I don't know this story, so I'm curious to ask. You mentioned you dropped out of school or
did, yeah.
quit football to pursue music. I think somewhat that's like a movie story, but also it happens in real life. And I just have a lot of respect for people who can recognize their own desires and their own, if you want to call it calling or purpose, whatever it is. I know it takes a lot of that to make a decision to drop school or whatever it is. What's the story behind that?
Yeah, man. Well, I'll start with just saying that all I've ever wanted to do is music. That's from when I was very, very young. All I wanted to be was a singer. And so I grew up in a football family, though. My dad is a football coach and also a singer and a songwriter. So it's really cool to have a very like football player dad who also is like this tender, like creative, because it really freed me to like be myself. But I got recruited to play football at Yale University, and that was kind of like, if I had to go to college, I said my sophomore year, I said, if I have to go to college, I want to go Ivy. And so I just really worked hard at football and then my grades and I got in. And so I moved to New Haven, Connecticut. I was majoring in economics. And over the summer after my freshman year, I actually kind of got the attention of this producer in L.A. And he was like a big time producer, like Brandy and Destiny's Child and like all these people. And I flew out to L.A. and it was just like, wow, this is it. And I got a contract, and then a friend was like, that's not what you want to do right now. It's kind of in the 360 time when those contracts were going out. And I was like, yeah, I don't know if I'm ready to leave Yale to do this. And then through that, I made a lot of contacts. I'm telling you the longest version of this. I'm sorry, cousin. No, stick with me. We're getting there. Exactly. And then I just get a call. Right. It was my junior year. I was in the middle of football camp. And I was on the team at this point. Like, I just, my goal was to get into Yale, and like I worked hard and I did that. So then it was like, I don't want this football thing to really progress past this point, you know? Right. So it doesn't matter if I play, which is such a bad attitude to have. Looking back, I'm like, if you're there, do it. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like either quit or do it. But I was like, I had just switched to wide receiver because like it was more fun than quarterback. If you're not going to start, you know, I want to run around and like be in shape. And so I was in the middle of camp, and I get a call, and it's from one of the contacts that I'd made, and she's like, hey, there's this new show called The Voice. It's going to be season 2. It's going to be Kelly Clarkson's season. They're pumping a lot of money into it, you know, like, just like Idol made Kelly, like, you'll be the next Kelly. And I was like, all right, let's just do this. Like, let's just take a chance. So I went that night, like, an hour later, I just went to my coach, and I was like, hey, I'm going to go out to California. And he was like, okay, yeah, let's talk about it in a couple of weeks. I was like, nah, I'm leaving at 6 tomorrow morning. Like, I'm not coming to practice tomorrow. Right. And so went, and I had, like, hair down to here, chopped it off. Like, they gave me, like, a pompadour and walked in and, like, sang my songs, man, came back. And they told me they wanted me to come out there to do, like, the season. And so I had, like, 2 days to decide whether I was leaving. And in the Yale rules, you can take 2 semesters off.
Okay.
So, like, at the time, I was kind of like, why not? You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm going to L.A. And so I actually quit the day of our scrimmage because it was the last day to drop out without having to pay tuition. And the tuition is not cheap. So I was like, let me drop out now today. And so I went to the coach. Actually, everyone's, like, putting their pads on, and I go knock on, like, the coach's office. And head coach comes out, and I'm like, hey, man, I'm going to drop out. I'm going to go to L.A. And he's like, oh, yeah, let's talk. Go get dressed out, and and then we'll talk after the game. And I was like, I don't think you understand. Like, I'm ineligible. Like, I've signed the paper. Wow. And I remember he was like, well, dang, this for the sake of this body. And
that's how they talk up in Yale.
Exactly. And
I'll be darned.
Yeah, exactly. And it was actually really cool because the team found out I sang, like, first meeting. I didn't want any of them to know, but, like, I stood up. I didn't have a fun fact. Oh, and I was like, my name's Des Duran, and I don't. And then the coach was like, he signed a record deal when he was 11. I don't know why everyone's Southern. We're in Connecticut, but that's just the only voice I can do. So they all loved that I sang. They would have me, like, if coaches were late to a meeting, I'd, like, get up and sing. That's you know awesome. What I mean? Like, the team was always so supportive. So when I left, I think they were all like, yeah, like, get out of here. Yeah. Like, go do it. Go do your thing. But then I went out there, auditioned. I didn't make the team, but it was actually really cool. Like, people were so positive on the voice, and they were like, bring him back, you know? And then the Katinas, I got to go on tour with the Katinas, and I kind of just stayed out there and, like, was like, I'm going to learn more about the music industry. Yeah. I was like, so I took the next semester off, and I was living with really cool guys. I was living with this producer named Andre Harris. He was part of a group called Dre and Vidal. Okay. They did, like, Say Yes, Flowetry, and, like, cool. Butterflies, Michael Jackson, Caught Up, Usher, yeah. And, like, he was just so kind to me. Yeah. Mm. He was, like, a really great guy, and, like, really taught me so much, and, hey, man, it's about tone, it's about feel, it's about this, you know, and we would write together, writers would come in and write, and it was just a really cool time to do that. The other guy who lived there was Ryan Toby from Sister Act, and I think it was City High is the name of the group. And he would, like, he was gave me, like, voice lessons, man, and just really pushed me. It was like football practice with him, man. It was like, you can be better. And I was like, I wanted to be better for him. Just the most talented person I've ever been around is Ryan. And then fast forward, I'm supposed to go back to school. And June rolls around, and I get a call, and it's from the casting. They're like, hey, you want to be on season 3? Yeah. I was like, no, I do not.
That's funny.
And so I hung up the phone. I didn't say anything. Exactly. Fool me once. Yeah. I kind of, like, just had to make a decision. My agent called me and was like, hey, they called me too. You can't keep this secret from anybody. And I kind of talked it over with my family, and they were like, whatever you want to do. Obviously, my parents kind of want me to go back to Yale, and because I would have had to officially drop out to do this season. Yes. So this was, like, the bigger decision. Mm-hmm. So I kind of was just like, man, this is the dream. The only reason I don't want to do it is because I'm scared. Hmm. I had watched season 1, and there was a girl who didn't make it twice because they actually ran out of contestants, and she came back around, and she didn't make it twice. And I was just like,
so that's messing with you.
Yeah, I was like, how do you even have a career if you don't make it twice when they can't see you? You know what I'm saying? Like, from then on out, it's just like, oh, whatever he does is because how he looks. Because when they couldn't see him, they didn't want him. Mm. So I decided to do it, man. And I got to pick my own song. I sang Sarah Smile by Hall & Oates, and got 3 chairs, and then we went top 8. And I've had, like, a lot of opportunities that have come out of it since then.
When you made that decision to really drop out of Yale, did it feel like a heavy decision? Like, cause I mean, I don't know everything, but I feel like that's a defining moment in your life. Like, your life could be completely different if you had stayed at Yale. When you made the decision, though, did you feel the weight of that?
I think I've felt the weight of it for years. Yeah. You know what I mean? Cause the story isn't, like, happily ever after when you get 3 chairs. Like, that's the start. Mm-hmm. Anyone who's been on The Voice knows, like, it doesn't make your life on any level. It's opened a lot of doors and still opens a lot of doors, which is really cool, and created, like, a string of performances that I can send people and go, like, hey, I can sing. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. But I think for me, it's always been about, like, having to come back and go, it doesn't matter if it was the right decision. I have to make it the right decision. Yes. So now I have to, like, work really hard to go, okay, that was the right decision. I'm going to make this the right decision. I'm going to make it work. So, I mean, there have been sleepless nights, man, where I'm like, man, an econ degree from Yale sounds real nice right now. But at the end of the day, I still have good buddies from that experience, and I didn't want to be an investment banker, and I didn't want to be another 6 figures in debt with school loans. These are the things I say,
bro,
to make myself feel better. I think it's like they talk about, like, skydiving. Like, the hardest part is just jumping out of the plane. And I think once the decision's made, if you can just, like, stay forward and go, like, decision's made, like, I have to make this the right decision, it gets a lot easier.
Well, I want you to know, I really honor just you being true to yourself and listening to the desires of your own heart for making that decision. I think everyone is in their lives are faced with different forks in the road where things can go one way or another, and it's a foggy road. You don't know what's down it, but sometimes you just have to make that decision. And I'll always respect and honor people who are able to do that for themselves.
Thank you, man.
We talked, you know, before we got on set, just about some things that are kind of in the that are brewing for you. And I told you, man, that I'm so just proud of you, but I'm inspired by your, I think you talked a little bit about that, Josh, your discipline, your focus, you know, with all the different places you've had to live, the different experiences, and to still do it and to see that you still got joy to create music and to present your music is awesome. Because we've heard the other stories of people just like, I'm just going to go do something easy because I'm tired of grinding. So I appreciate you, and I'm so proud of you for not giving up.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Could you share with us, because I know there's a lot of people who moved to Nashville, singer-songwriters.
There's a few of them.
There's a lot of people come here with dreams, and that's great. But I'm curious to ask someone who's really doing it, what's like the part of the grind in Nashville that maybe surprised you, or you weren't expecting, or maybe weren't ready for, if there is any?
Man, I will say I don't know if I'm like in the Nashville grind. I probably should be more. I'm writing with friends and whoever wants to write with me. I really came to Nashville like at ground zero in my mind. Mm-hmm. Kind of like, who wants to work with a dude who was on The Voice 8 years ago? Mm-hmm. I've got songs and I've got money I've saved. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to make this happen. Like, that's just kind of was my mentality. So I didn't come here expecting a lot of open doors. I didn't come here expecting a lot of excitement. Mm. I've gotten some from people who love me as a person. And now recently gotten more. And it's been kind of like a slow grind. My past been like a little different. I just had people who believed in me. I had a friend, his name's David Byerly, who was like, you're excellent talent. And the city needs to see that. And so he made a residency for me, and it was every week for 3 months, 4 months,
wow.
3 months. And man, that thing was empty most of the time. Okay. So I sang for 10 people some weeks, and, but other times it was full. Like when y'all came, it was full. I was just your family. It was full. But that was the best. It was your family and my family. There ain't a venue in town that's not full. But and there were other weeks that went really well and were packed out and it was awesome. But it allowed people to see that I can do this thing. And I sound real cocky probably saying
no,
that, but
no,
like
not at all.
This is what I do. Let's say that way. And people got excited about it and it created more opportunities, I think. But I think it allowed me too to like come here with no entitlement. Like I think even when I was with you guys like hanging out, I was like a little bit entitled. Like I felt like people owed me opportunities, and like I've worked hard and been a singer, and then you come here and it's like everybody's worked hard and been a singer. And go to New York, buddy.
Yeah.
You want to talk about working hard and being a singer? These people are working catering jobs all day and then standing in line at open calls for 10 hours. Like people are working hard. And so I think I just came here like whatever anyone's willing to give me, I'm super grateful. But I think also like I just love singing, dude.
Yeah.
Like I'm really like lucky that like if I get to sing for a living, like I'm mad happy. Mm. Like I sing at weddings a lot still. Yeah. I love it.
Yeah.
I get to sing for 2 hours.
Yeah.
That's like 30 songs. Yeah. It's freaking awesome.
Yeah.
Like I get to sing my favorite songs, anything I want. And like if people are listening, great. And if they're not, like I'm listening and I get to like have fun and try stuff. Yeah. And like a girl was like, I just want you to know you're so much more than a wedding singer. And I was like, I just kind of looked at her and she meant really well. And I just was like, I'm not ashamed of that.
Yeah.
Like I have a job.
There's a whole movie.
And it pays my bills. Yeah, exactly. I love Adam Sandler and I lived with my sister for 3 years.
Yeah.
So I've knocked off everybody, but we're all more than what we do, man.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't answer your question at all. All that to say the Nashville grind is inspiring to me. Cause when I meet people who are in it, I'm always like, I can do more.
Mm.
Like when someone comes up to their friend and goes like, how was your song today? Mm-hmm. Your song today, sir?
Yeah.
What are we talking about?
Yeah.
Like, I'll write when I'm inspired. Yeah, yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But like when you're around that energy, exactly. It's like, dang, I can work harder. And anything that points out something I can do better helps me. So then I'm not like yelling at like the cosmos. I'm not God, but like, I'm just like, why not me? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And it's like, oh, because are you writing a song a day?
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
There are things you can do. Mm-hmm. So it helps me not go crazy.
I love, Des, you're just in what you've been sharing, you know, whether in the grind of Nashville or just on the come up, man, you truly love music. Yeah. It's in you. You know, you love to sing. And hey, we've seen it in our 30 plus years, right, of this being a career.
Yeah.
And we're grateful. We're absolutely grateful. We're blessed beyond what we even deserve. This is the way we make a living. And I will say that sometimes when it is your living, it's the way you make a living. The passion for singing, when you don't even realize it, it could be 100% on the back burner, right?
Yes.
Because now you're and you do have to attend to the business part of it. You know, in our little operation, we have, you know, meetings, one meeting a week, just talking about business, because you have to do that. But dude, man, don't ever lose that, man. I love that you just still love to do it. Yeah. You've got to get paid. You've got a value, but you love singing, period.
I do.
It's awesome.
You said Michael Bublé. Who are some artists that are like foundational to your love for
Frank's
music?
Frank's number one for me. Okay. Frank Sinatra's number one. I will say I found Frank through Michael. So, and I think Michael's just somebody everybody knows right now.
Yeah.
But Frank Sinatra's like probably the biggest, my favorite. I my first love was gospel music, man. Mm. Like I just loved the way it made me feel, just the passion of it, and obviously like the grooves, and I mean it's influenced every genre that exists now. There's a reason, and it's such a wonderful, wonderful genre. Best singers in the world, crazy, insane. But I think when I heard Frank, I was like, wow, I'm feeling like all the same things, and he's not really doing much. You know what I'm saying? As far as like vocal acrobats or like anything else like that, it's like I was feeling everything the same, and he didn't have like even songs. He didn't have like all the stuff around him. Like, I mean, how can you not feel something like on New York, New York? There's like 12 horns behind him, but like 12, probably more. But even songs where it was just like him and a piano, I was like, golly, like this hit me so hard. Like this is a very good year, or like My Way, or like Bewitched. Like so many songs that I was just like, I feel, and I'm such a, that's what I like about music. And that's what I like about singing is like, it's like, if I could dance, I'd be a dancer, dude. Like those guys get to really express themselves. Gosh. Like I'm jealous of that release. Yeah. I wonder in heaven, God will allow me the ability.
I'm right there with you, man.
You know what I'm saying? Like that just looks fun. But that's what I love about music is the release. Yeah. And you could just tell Frank's going there, man. Yeah. And I love storytellers. He's my favorite. But then like, gospel music, man. Like Kirk Franklin, his music, the lyrics, the passion. Mm-hmm. That was where it started, and then I probably should be able to name more singers. Then there's like the stuff my dad showed me, like Huey Lewis and the News, Paul McCartney and the Wings, The Beatles, ABBA.
Okay,
It gets my real random, man. It gets very random from here on out. But
I think I love that you brought up Sinatra. I feel like he's such a good example of what music can be for someone. I don't know, was he 50s, 60s, decades ago?
Yeah.
To still be able to touch people with his music.
There's
a timeless aspect, and he moves you when you really listen to him. And you even touched on it. It's not like he's doing a lot. He's not the greatest vocalist of all time. Maybe you'll disagree, but
no, I would listen to that argument. Yeah, for sure. I think he's a storyteller.
But yes, exactly. Yeah. The music is able to touch you and communicate to people for generations.
Yeah.
A message that really you can't put into words. And I love that. I think that's a great muse to have. Well, thanks for talking music with me.
Yeah.
I guess I'll ask you one more question. And this is a question that we ask guests a lot on the show. And really, it's just about, it comes from my own appreciation for dreams, for what people dream towards. And so I'll just ask you, what is it that Des Durand is dreaming of right now?
That is such a complicated question at 34. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, it's so different than like 18 or anything else like that. I think it's like, that question can be like so tempered by like what you think's possible. I just want to sing and people show up. You know what I mean? There's a part of the Nashville Grand, I'll say, like getting people to buy tickets, dear God. Yeah. You know what I mean? And like, I would love to, I'll just simplify it instead of just like, I would love to tour and people come, man. And probably like the venue that would be the dream for me would be like theaters. That's pretty big. But I also want to sing with orchestras and trumpets. I think on a more existential level, I want to contribute to the universe of music that's out there. I want to release music and be a part of that. I want to have something to show for the last 12 years. That I've been grinding and performing. So yeah, it's probably like my dream as far as career stuff goes. Yeah.
That's awesome. There's a book I read last year called The Creative Act by Rick Rubin.
I'm reading that right now.
Are you really?
I love the formatting. Oh yeah. It really keeps your attention.
Yeah.
Proverbs.
Yeah. He's awesome. The book that, I don't know if you've gotten to this part, but there's one thing that stuck with me from the book is he talks about the job of the artist, the job of the creator is to make something and then put it out there.
Yeah.
That is success. Mm-hmm. To Rick Rubin, one of the greatest producers of our generation, is make something and put it out there. Once it's out of your hands, it's out of your control. It's not, that's not your job.
Yeah.
And I think to me, that really, spoke to me just knowing that, I think as artists, a lot of times it's easy to only think about the audience, which is an important part, but in a way that's out of our control.
Yeah.
It's out of your control. And it's, your obligations to the artist, yourself. And
so real.
I think that part of, your dream to put stuff out there, and let people hear it, I think that is an honorable dream, and that's what the artist does.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to get there. I think, like, I'm very much, man. Like, I love singing and, like, forget y'all in this moment that I'm having fun. And but I think when it comes to, like, recording stuff or, like, even the internet, that's what I've been trying to, it's been hard for me to, like, put it out, and then it's like doesn't feel like it's mine anymore. You know what I'm saying? It almost feels like there's a comment section, and people can have opinions, and they exist, and they're there. And that's been a real struggle for me. But I mean, at the end of the day, like if you're not making art and releasing it, like then like what are you doing? You know what I mean? You're not an artist. So maybe that's me like trying to transition from being a singer to like an artist. But that's definitely like a challenge, man, for me right now. I released my first single next month.
Wow,
and
come
so
on, bro.
We'll see
how
it goes, man. But I'm just glad we did it. And
yeah.
I'm glad it's over and the process is fun.
All the platforms?
Yeah, where can people find it?
It'll be on all the platforms. Hopefully YouTube as well. We're trying to figure out what a video looks like. With no budget. But,
hey,
some of those
are doable,
man.
Exactly.
Those really well.
Exactly. So it's called Let's Just Call It Love.
Let's go.
It's a ballad. I kind of been really looking for like production partners.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just been like a little bit of a struggle because it is such a kind of strange space musically.
Mm.
And so finally just kind of got with a friend and we were like, let's just produce this ourselves. Nice. It's a ballad. All you need is a piano player and some strings.
Yeah.
So we did that. It ended up being really beautiful, man, and kind of taught me a lot about just
can't wait
like
to hear it.
Figuring it
where
out.
Can you have any shows here in the Nashville area that people can come see you live?
At ANZ Blue.
Let's
In Hillsborough Village. It's right across the street from the Bell Court Theater. I think that's what it's called.
Yep.
I'm new to Nashville, only 3 years. But I think we're doing May 16th. It's this Thursday, and then May 16th, and then June 20th.
Nice. Awesome.
Yeah, man.
So well, Dez, I wanted to say this, and I loved your honesty in answering the question, what are your dreams for the future? But I just feel like I need to say this to you, that you're living your dream right now, man. You're living it out. And yes, there's layers to it, and there's phases. And I believe that when you were talking about just, you got to make the decision and make it right. That's all a part of the journey, man. But I love seeing you living your dream, man.
Thank you, man. I love you.
Thank you. Love you, bro.
Dez, bro, you are welcome back on the show anytime, man.
I don't have anything else to say, man. You got it all. No,
I really appreciate your time, and it's always a treat getting to be with you, so thanks so much.
Thank you, man. Yeah. I had a blast.
To those of you listening, thank you for tuning in. We'll be back with more episodes soon. Have a great day.